Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but don't.
Okay, that was the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness song, theme song, the Solartopia song from the great immortal Pete Seeger, singing along with Dar Williams and David Burns, the Rivertown Kids, on the Grammy-winning, I gotta go get my Grammy one of these days, of a Grammy-winning album. Tomorrow's Children from Appleseed Records did win a Grammy. Technically, I am entitled to a Grammy, I think. I'll keep you posted on that. I can't wait to get my own little Grammy. It'll go alongside my trophy from this man, Robert Petraeus. Bob Petraeus, one of the great activists of our time, professor of political science at Columbus State Community College. He's going to fill us in on all the latest from the heartland here in Ohio, including the medical marijuana situation, which is important. We're going to talk about John Kasich, the governor, who is clearly going to be a candidate for the presidency of the United States. God help us in 2016. The fracking issue, which is also very big here in Ohio, especially in terms of the radioactive waste. And maybe if we get a little time, we'll talk about the Detroit Tigers. Bob, are you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
All right, Bob. So you have just come from a meeting with the people who are trying to do medical marijuana here in Ohio. Can you tell us what the situation is and what we're looking at for 2016? Will medical marijuana be on the ballot in Ohio? And what do you think its chances are if it is?
Well, there's a debate. It won't be on in 2014. It could be on in 2015. Most likely it'll be on in 2016 for the election year. What it looks like is going to happen in 2015, they're going to go to local initiatives to essentially decriminalize marijuana, make it a non-criminal offense through all the major cities in Ohio. So Toledo's already working on this initiative, and the Columbus, I anticipate, will soon introduce it. So 2015, what you'll see is a variety of referendums throughout Ohio, and I anticipate that the actual vote will be on in 2016 for medical marijuana and industrial use of hemp.
Let's talk about this. I know something's happening in Toledo as we speak. Can you tell us the details of what you mean by decriminalization and how this is going to play out? Because I'm sure this is going to set a pattern all over the country. Ohio seems to have that power in this country to set the pattern. We're right here. And Bob and I are both talking to PRN here from Central Ohio. So tell us what's going on in Toledo right now.
Well, in Ohio, most of the major cities have what's called home rule charters. So they have the ability to enact ordinances that essentially apply only to their municipality and can circumvent certain state laws. So you recall many years ago in Ann Arbor in the 70s when they decriminalized marijuana there. So what's going to happen beginning in Toledo is going to be an attempt to essentially decriminalize, making marijuana not a criminal offense in the city of Toledo, that it'll only be governed by a civil infraction. It'll be a fine, sort of like a jaywalking ticket.
But it still means that the cops can take your pot and smoke it themselves.
Well, that's the tradition that came out of Ann Arbor. leading to the axiom that the cops always have the best dough.
Yeah, well, so that, it's actually part of an extraterrestrial plot to get all the cops in the United States stoned because they take the marijuana away on these misdemeanor charges. So currently, what is the law in Toledo that would be changed? Is this going to have to be done through the Toledo
City Council? Well, state law would be overridden. And as you know, actually, the state law on criminalized pot in Ohio, and I think we've talked about this before, in part because of Dick Wolf there, a Law and Order fame. You need a lot of pot to have a felony in Ohio, but not that much to have a criminal misdemeanor, which in many cases, particularly in a place like Columbus, is going to be negotiated down to disorderly conduct because it's a college town and you don't want to place undue burdens on college students. And occasionally, some of those actually play for the Ohio State Buckeye football team. So I'm always astounded at how liberal the city police are when they accidentally arrest a star football player.
And yeah, that's so always. Well, my understanding is I had a conversation. There was a pot rally in Columbus a couple of years ago, and I met this guy that you just mentioned, Richard Wolf, Dick Wolf. Now, he is a member of the Wolf family. That's it, W-O-L-F-E, which has run Columbus, Central Ohio, for the last century, like a southern Mississippi plantation. But Richard Wolf is a pothead. And so I guess it was, 10, 20 years ago, the legislature wanted to have a pot law. And they went to Dick Wolf because they knew he smoked, and they asked him how much should they allow, and he came up, 100 grams? He came up with a huge amount of pot that you can have in Ohio before it's illegal or before it's a felony, but he put it in grams so they wouldn't know how big the amount was. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, and I mean, it really takes it's a fair amount of pot well beyond personal use. Instead of an ounce, and you're talking some, pounds here before it's considered a felony.
Right, so I think it was 100 grams, it's 4 ounces. Yeah. That you can have under Ohio law before it's considered a felony, something like that. So now what Toledo is going to – so you're saying that if Toledo – is this by referendum or through the city council?
Yeah. No, it will be by referendum.
So if this referendum passes in Toledo, then the city of Toledo is going to overrule state law. Is that right?
Correct.
So,
under home rule.
And so what does the statute in Toledo say that they're proposing?
Essentially that marijuana will not be, possession of marijuana will not be a criminal offense, and it will be the lowest priority of the police to in any way look for those smoking marijuana. So it's given a low priority, and it's not criminal anymore under the Toledo Charter.
Now, do they have enough signatures in Toledo to put this on the ballot?
Not yet, but really, and this is the beauty of this, Columbus is the same situation. So few people vote. A lot of these cities like Toledo, much more Columbus, are one-party towns controlled by the Democrats. And there's no real competitive elections. So the voter turnout is so low. And the amount of signatures is based on the voter turnout. So in Columbus, you could put an initiative on for about 4,500 signatures in a town of 800,000 people. You could put any initiative you want on the ballot for home rule.
So is that the plan now, to go around the cities? I assume Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, the big cities in Ohio.
Yeah, so they'll all be decriminalized in the major cities, hence making it a fait accompli when we move towards industrial hemp and medical marijuana.
Well, what is the what, if anything, does the referendum in Toledo say about industrial hemp?
I'm not sure the one in Toledo deals with that yet, but the one that we're going to put forward, the OR group, the Ohio Rights Group, has medical marijuana in all its initiatives. And, you know, affirmative defense, you have a right to use marijuana if you have certain medical conditions. But in all of our initiatives that we'll be putting forward, you'll see the right to grow hemp as well. What we're hoping to do is force the state of Ohio to pass a law that will make the growing and selling of hemp legal.
Well, you mean through the legislature?
Well, we think if it's already in place in all the major cities, it'll create an enforcement nightmare, and the state will probably have to move in and regulate the hemp industry by passing a law. Plus, I mean, we've got, you know, literally tens of thousands of farmers in Ohio who don't want to import hemp and other manufacturers from Canada or China. I mean, Ohio, with our industrial capacity and our farmland and Appalachia, is just a great place to grow hemp.
Well, my understanding is that it's proceeding in Kentucky, and that both Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, the two Republican senators from Kentucky, are supporting industrial hemp. Do you know anything about that?
Well, there was a program, as some of your listeners know, with the federal government that was going to allow an experimental agricultural program in certain select states and to deal with hemp. And Kentucky was one of the first states that leaped on board and said, yes, we'd like to be part of growing hemp as industrial product and moving forward. In fact, I know there was a letter that was sent from the Farm Bureau in Ohio to Governor Kasich saying, look, we can get seeds in the ground. Also, Ohio State University and Agricultural University and other research universities in Ohio are saying, let's get involved in this program. Let's be like Kentucky and put these hemp seeds in the ground. There's still time for them to grow, and it allows us to experiment with all these products, with, you know, the fuel that'll come from the fibers for clothes, and a variety, you know, the 25,000 products that were predicted back in the 1930s. I mean, hemp was going to be the next billion-dollar industry in the 1930s until your friends in the petrochemical industry decided to destroy it because it was all natural and not petrochemical.
What was the response of Governor Kasich to the request by the Farm Bureau to be allowed to grow hemp?
Well, we don't know that response yet. It hasn't come forward yet, but many people have suspected over the years, at least there's been those rumors that the governor is not unfamiliar in the sense of Newt Gingrich and Al Gore and numerous other politicians with not only hemp, but other things.
Well, I have actually talked to people who claim they went to college with John Kasich, our governor, who say he was a major pothead. I assume you've had similar conversations.
Yeah, the story has been floating around for decades.
Well, in a certain sense, it's actually a little disturbing to think that, you know, the people as right-wing as Newt Gingrich and John Kasich have smoked pot, and it hasn't changed their politics. I find that a little disturbing, actually. But I think it's probably true that Kasich did smoke pot. What do you think?
You know, when he was in college in 1970, 70% of all college students at the time self-reported that they were smoking pot. So you would have to been in the minority, or as Michael Moore used to say, had a legitimate medical reason not to smoke pot back then.
Well, so we're waiting on the governor of Ohio to decide whether or not
to be as progressive as Kentucky.
Well, are the farmers in Kentucky actually planting hemp now?
No, these, in my understanding, these are research. I mean, I'm sure some farmers are involved, but these are the major research institutions, and that there will be certain farmers involved in this growing of hemp. But it's, you know, it's a experimental program that's going to test the viability of growing it and, you know, what you can do with it.
God, you know, all they got to do is read the farm journals from George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. What experimentation do they have to do with hemp? It's only been around 5,000 years. What's wrong with these people?
Well, you know, the this is a political and cultural decision, not a scientific historical fact decision. I mean, we all know the reality, and you've pointed out and written books on it as well, that, you know, both Jefferson and Washington were well-known hemp farmers. And wasn't it Washington who liked to separate the male and the female plants?
Yes, he did. George separated the male and the female. Jefferson wrote a long passage in his farm journal about how much he hated growing tobacco. I mean, growing tobacco is really hard to do, and how much he loved growing hemp because it was so easy to do. Now, they never discussed smoking it, though. I've never seen a passage in any historical research that says that Jefferson and Washington talked about smoking hemp or smoking pot. They would have called it hemp. Yeah, even if they smoked it back then, they wouldn't have called it marijuana. They wouldn't have never heard that word, actually.
It was the Indian hemp seed.
Yeah, and George Washington imported a lot of special seed, hemp seed, from India. He made a big point of it. George Washington, both Washington and Jefferson were great farmers, by the way. They were extremely...
And Washington was the leading distiller of whiskey.
Washington was a big alcohol fan of alcohol as well. Washington named his dogs Tipsy and Drunkard, just for the record. But nonetheless, these guys, our first and third presidents. I assume John Adams also grew hemp. I never saw anything where he was such an uptight guy. But if anybody would have benefited from smoking pot, it would have been John Adams. He really needed to get stoned. But nonetheless, I haven't seen any historical documentation that said where Washington and Jefferson talked about smoking pot. But there was this is kind of a twisted historiographic journey, but there was allegedly a letter written by Abraham Lincoln to the Hohner Harmonica Company saying... Uh-huh. This was kind of an endorsement. I don't know if he was paid or what, he loved to sit on his porch, smoke hemp, and play the Hohner harmonica. Now, this letter was allegedly framed and hung in a museum for the Hohner harmonica in Germany. But it's the actual letter has disappeared, if it existed at all. And so we don't have a
part of the
time.
Problem is it was on hemp paper. Someone rolls it up.
No, I think they used the pipe. I think they would have used the corn cob pipe back then. You know, I don't think the Zigzag company was in business back then.
But hemp paper was quite common. In fact, archivists referred to when we used hemp paper as opposed to pulping trees as the so-called era of good paper. Hemp
made
such high quality paper.
Well, the problem with hemp paper is I think it's hard to make it white, and also it's kind of it tends to be kind of I don't know if grainy is the right word. You know, it's hard to get the stems out of the hemp paper. But there's no doubt that hemp paper is stronger than paper made by trees. And in fact, Ben Franklin's first paper factory, you know, he was obviously a publisher, his first factory that he made to make paper made it from hemp. And there is the rumor is that the first draft of the Declaration of Independence that Tom Jefferson went up to his room to write was also done on hemp paper. So the question now is, who is opposing industrial hemp? I mean, is there a vested industrial interest that's come forward? I was told that the paper industry no longer really cares about hemp, you know, and has embraced it. I don't know who else is really fighting industrial hemp.
Well, the petrochemical industry, the plastics and the petrochemical industry would be the one in many ways hardest hit by all those plastics that could easily be replaced by hemp products.
Are you saying the Koch brothers would be come down against industrial hemp? I guess we would expect anything that's good for the planet would be opposed by the Koch brothers, so that's probably something we'd expect. So
we would hope that their old libertarian leanings would come through on this issue.
Oh, yeah, right. well, let's not hold our breath on that one. You know, the Koch brothers have been... I love how the Koch brothers, you know, they got their start as so-called libertarians by opposing all taxation. But they are supporting and working very hard to get all the states to tax people who put solar panels on their rooftops. That's actually happening.
I mean, that's their official policy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They want to... it's been done in Arizona now. If you put a solar panel on your rooftop, you've got to pay a nominal tax. It was going to be a very substantial tax, but the public pressure, I think it's only like $5, something like that, but there is a tax for putting solar panels on your house, thanks to the Koch brothers. So,
well, that's the takeoff on the old adage is you won't have solar power until you can meter the sun, or in this case, literally tax the sun.
Right. Now let's segue. Let's wrap this up though. In terms of industrial hemp, we're expecting the farmers of Ohio to be able to grow it within a fairly short period of time, right? I mean, you're saying that this referendum, which will be on the ballot in Toledo, and then in other cities around Ohio by 2015, allows for growing industrial hemp. Is that right?
The next wave, the one in Toledo, I'm not sure of. I'm not sure it deals with hemp, but all the ones that are coming forward, Columbus and the other major cities, will incorporate hemp, which is interesting in part because it's sort of the urban farming, you know, the city farms movement, with a logical thing to grow in a lot of these vacant houses. In these urban, particularly in the inner city, what would grow well there? And, of course, the answer is hemp grows well everywhere.
Well, so if this passes, well, of course, if this passes in Columbus next year, I can plant my front yard in hemp?
Oh, we hope so.
It doesn't require a permit?
I'm sure that that would be, it may require a permit. It depends on, what the city says. And so they're allowed to reasonably permit that, but probably no more than anything else, like, a city garden.
Interesting. Okay. And, of course, we all know the test to determine, since marijuana and hemp look pretty much identical. If you roll it up and smoke it, if you get a headache, it's hemp. And if you have to go have a cupcake, it's marijuana. So we want to make sure that city police know the difference there. We're talking with Bob Fetrakis, one of the great activists of our country, professor of political science at Columbus State Community College, also an attorney and publisher, editor and publisher of the Columbus Free Press and the website freepress.org, where I am senior editor and have a column along with Bob. Before we get into election protection, Bob, since we're on the hemp issue and which has so many environmental ramifications. You've done a lot of work on the radioactive implications, fallout from fracking, and a lot of fracking going on in Ohio. Can you talk to us a bit about what's going on with fracking in Ohio, what the governor has done, and where we stand on the radioactive waste issue when it comes to fracking?
Well, Ohio is now sort of the dumping ground for what they call it, you know, brine, but it's really a misnomer. You know, brine implies, you know, some salty water. The reality is West Virginia and Pennsylvania are sending under the Interstate Commerce Clause just millions of gallons of contaminated fracking water from drilling in those two states. And in the water itself, we know that there are very high levels of radioactive contamination, primarily, essentially, radon. And as we know, you live here in Ohio. Everyone in Ohio is recommended, it's recommended by the health department that we have radon gas detectors. They're going down, they're drilling, they're picking up radium. A lot of this has been measured by the Ohio EPA, which allows only 5 picocuries per liter. And some of these initial reports have come in 890 picocuries, 2,000 picocuries, really at a level that will cause cancer if this water gets into any of the wells or the drinking water sources. So they're bringing in millions and millions of gallons of radioactive contaminated water, and it's also contaminated with a variety of other toxins, at least 600 known toxins, many of them carcinogenic and poisonous. And in fact, an individual was just convicted in the Youngstown area for essentially taking this and dumping it directly into the sewer, which feeds the water system in Youngstown, Ohio. It's a massive contamination from fracking. And John Kasich, the governor's response to this, is to not regulate it, not allow the health department in Ohio. The head of the Ohio EPA was forced out for uncovering this stuff. They've turned it over to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, which has virtually no ability to test or detect radioactive contamination.
And you helped uncover a story about how ODNR has been actually promoting fracking. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, they've been all over the state. In fact, in some areas, when people have reported that their land has been contaminated from the fracking industry, from the drillers, the ODNR would show up and write the people complaining tickets for wells that they didn't even know that were on their property from the 1920s, which they claimed weren't properly capped. So if you called in and said, oh, my God, they're spreading contamination all over my farmland and contaminating my pond that my livestock drink from, the ODNR's response was to show up and write you violation tickets and fine you for wells you didn't even know you had on your property.
So basically they're out there to intimidate people into not complaining about fracking. This is the Ohio Department of Resources.
Yeah, I mean, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources doesn't have the skills to do this testing because a very weak Ohio Environmental Protection Agency was doing the testing and coming up with this radioactive contamination in the fracking water. Essentially, they were forced out of regulating it, and it was given over to the ODNR. For example, the ODNR will use essentially Geiger counters, handheld kind of Geiger counters, But radium really isn't detected by that. The standard test for radium is a 21-day isolation test in a lab, but they're not requiring that. If you want to dump your fracking water at a waste site in Ohio, they will just wave a wand at it that won't detect the radiation instead of containing the water and isolating it and measuring it 21 days down the road.
That's amazing. We're talking with Bob Fitrakis, a professor of political science at Columbia State Community College and publisher of the, and editor of the Free Columbus Free Press and www.freepress.org. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show coming to you from PRN-FM. And we are covering, well, we've talked a bit about industrial hemp, and we're covering the fracking issue in Ohio, which is a really big deal. What's the prognosis, Bob? I mean, how is the citizenry going to be able to deal with these huge quantities of radioactive waste that are coming out of the fracking industry here?
Well, many of these cities in Ohio are using the home rule in their charter. Mansfield, for example, and exerting the fact, in fact, I'm calling you from Mansfield, Ohio, right now, where I'm attending a medical marijuana board meeting. But what they've done is said that people have a right to breathe clean air and drink clean water, and hence fracking will not be allowed within the corporate limits of Mansfield, Ohio. And not only that, any attempts, to set up bringing fracking material here will be subject to heavy regulation. So essentially, it's illegal to do any fracking within the city of Mansfield. There's an attempt, it came very close to passing in Youngstown, Ohio itself. So what you're finding is that the municipalities in Ohio that are in the fracking zone, and you're familiar with this, Harvey, as well, and I've done shows on it and written about it. We now know those numerous earthquakes were caused. It's a scientific fact in Youngstown because of the injection of fracking waste into wells. They took former wells that had been capped, and instead of building them to contain waste, they injected all this toxic and radioactive fracking water, and it created literally earthquakes in the Youngstown area on two separate occasions, multiple earthquakes.
Now, has the industry admitted, and has the state, confirmed that these earthquakes were in fact caused by the fracking wells?
Yeah, the state finally, after a tremendous battle. Now, a couple years, some of the earliest ones go back to 2011, finally admitted that it was the injection of this toxic radioactive fracking waste into these wells, which weren't designed really to store it, that triggered earthquakes, some of them directly under the city of Youngstown.
God, that's mind-boggling. Well, let's hope they don't do a lot of fracking during the two reactors in Ohio that are bad enough as it is, Perry and Davis Bessie.
Yeah. Well, one of them's on a fault, is it not?
Yes, the Perry nuclear plant east of Cleveland was actually damaged by an earthquake in 1986. So the Perry nuclear plant was the first one in the United States that we know of that was actually damaged by an earthquake here in Ohio. I was in a debate once with somebody from Cleveland Electric Illuminating, and I complimented them on finding an earthquake fault in Ohio to build a new nuclear plant on. But now, of course, with fracking, the whole place is subject to serious seismic activity. It's a problem. Now, Kasich, the governor, has been very pro-fracking, as best we can tell. I read something where he called all the opponents of fracking to be extremists. Have you followed that one?
Well, the actually memos were turned up. There was from the governor's office to the Ohio EPA And these memos went to the fracking industry. And there was a coordinated secret campaign to discredit and brand as extremists all the environmentalists that raised questions about, the health concerns dealing with fracking and the toxic elements. They called them extremists. They said they were, these trained propagandists. They were going after, the Sierra Club and other environmental groups and specific activists. So there was a coordinated secret campaign out of the governor's office to discredit anyone that was opposed to fracking.
Wow. Well, let's switch now. Let's talk about this governor. John Kasich is the governor of Ohio. He was a multi-term congressman from Central Ohio. He went to Ohio State. He's from Pittsburgh originally. I guess he's in his early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. He is a shoo-in to get reelected, and we want to talk about the fact that you are, Bob Fitrakis, are the Green Party candidate for lieutenant governor, and it looks like you're likely to get on the ballot. Tell us about that initially. Talk to us about the Green Party candidacy here and what the situation is with the ballot and how the Republicans knocked the Libertarians off the ballot altogether.
Yeah, the Republican Party, when the Libertarian candidate, Charlie Earle, was seen as polling 6% of the vote and taking votes from Kasich, he was nominated by the Libertarians, had ties to the Tea Party. The Republican Party that dominates the State House, they have a veto-proof majority, simply decided to outlaw every minor party in Ohio. The Libertarian Party, the Green Party, which I'm a member of, the Constitution Party, and the Socialist Party. All four of those have been on the ballot. So they passed a law saying, you're no longer on the ballot, you got to go out and get 28,000 signatures to come back and be on the ballot. And they gave you very little time. Right? This is in a period where people are trying to get signatures as individual candidates of a party. But on top of this, they're now saying is you've got a few months. It's freezing. There's a polar vortex in Ohio. You've also got to go out and get 28,000 signatures statewide, including, 5,000 from, half of the counties in the state. So effectively, with the stroke of the pen, the Republican State House eliminated all minor parties in Ohio. And of course, this is unconstitutional. There was a Republican-appointed judge, Judge Watson, who, clearly knew the law and the Constitution and said, you can't do this. You can't, he used the sports example being Ohio. He said, you can't change, move the goalpost in the middle of the game. So the law was struck down. But meanwhile, the intended effect, which was to disrupt the Libertarian Party and the Green Party, worked. Right, neither party was able to get enough signatures because they've been outlawed in the middle of their campaign. Neither party got enough signatures. The Libertarian Party sued, went back to court and sued to get on the ballot and lost. We in the Green Party took a different approach. That is, by overturning the law, we only needed to get 500 write-in votes, which was the old standard to be a party. You needed to have 500 signatures. So there's a obscure element of Ohio law that says you can get on the ballot if you get 500 people to write in your name. So as we speak, Harvey, our current count, on election night, it was 766 write-ins the Green Party had. Right now, it's 628, and certification isn't done yet at the county level. That'll be done on May 27th, but Some of our votes have disappeared. But as we speak, the Green Party will be the only minor party on the ballot in Ohio. And your listeners should realize that's very important. It's the Green Party with the Libertarian Party that sued to have a recount in 2004. It wasn't John Kerry and the Democrats. It was the Green Party that led that effort. Also, in the 08 and 2012 election, it was the Green Party, with its status as a legal party, that formed the Election Observer and called upon election rights activists everywhere to make sure the votes were being counted fairly at the boards of elections and the polling places throughout Ohio. So that's another very important aspect of keeping the Green Party alive. Also in 2012, the Washington Spectator said a lawsuit, which I filed, I was a congressional candidate and I had status as a Green Party candidate. We filed in federal and state court to challenge this secret experimental program to write a secret private code on central tabulators in Ohio. They did that at 20 counties, overwhelmingly Democratic counties. And we had testimony showing from, highly qualified computer experts showing that by tampering with these central tabulators with custom code, you could actually steal votes. So we sued on that, and by bringing light to it, the numbers came back okay. But in Ohio, the Secretary of State is running a project with precinct-level data where he sends private contractors in tied to the Republican Party to write custom code for the central tabulators primarily in the Democratic areas, which could explain why in 2010 both Strickland as governor and Cordway as attorney general, the exit polls said they won. But in both cases, Republicans prevailed. John Kasich as governor and Mike DeWine as attorney general.
Now, Bob, you're not saying that the Republican Party would stoop so low as to steal an election. All right, let me just clarify.
Well, I think either party left unchecked would steal elections. I think that's
right.
The history of American politics. And in this case, the Republicans have perfected it with this new technology, with computer vote that.
Yeah, let's clarify. Bob Strake is my guest here, professor of political science at Columbia State Community College. Bob and I have co-authored 5 or 6, I've lost track, of books on election theft and election protection, especially as centered here in Ohio, where the 2004 election was stolen for George W. Bush. And such assertions have not been greeted well with supporters of the Democratic Party. In fact, both Bob and I have been thrown off daily toasts, among other places, for daring to make such assertions. We're talking with Bob Patrakis here about election theft. Bob, it looks pretty clear. John Kasich, the Republican governor, is running for re-election. He's about 15 points up on his opponent, Ed Fitzgerald. I don't think there's much doubt that that Kasich will get re-elected. And then he's going to run for president. And so all these folks who are assuming that Hillary Clinton is going to get the Democratic nomination and win, they're going to have to factor in John Kasich. I would doubt that John Kasich is going to be nominated for president, but he would certainly be a logical choice for vice president, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's from Ohio, the great bellwether state, and he'll be a two-term governor if he wins re-election. So a lot of people, Rupert Murdoch being one of them, who gave him $1 million in the last election cycle, want John Kasich as the vice president.
Right, and Kasich went, he made the obligatory pilgrimage out to Las Vegas to kiss the ring or some other part of the anatomy of
Sheldon Adelson, the billionaire casino mogul. And so Kasich is definitely in the running. He has done, you know, a few things, of course, to endear himself to the left. He's actually been receptive to Medicare, is that right? Or Medicaid?
Right. He accepted the Medicaid money and came under fire from the Tea Party for that. So he did accept Medicaid money that allowed 250,000 Ohioans to receive affordable health care.
Yeah, well, that's a shocking liberal collapse there. I mean, you know, I think people should understand. People from outside Ohio don't quite get it about this state. Ohio is a Democratic state in the terms of the majority of the voters. You know, strong Democratic majorities in Cleveland, Columbus, not quite so strong, but still substantial in Cincinnati, Youngstown, Toledo, Dayton. These are all Democratic cities, which went for Obama and for a liberal Democratic senator, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown in the last election. But the state house is totally controlled. I mean, totally controlled. By the Republicans. It's an astonishing situation, and we have a Republican governor who probably was not legitimately elected. And so it's for those of us living in Ohio here, you know, I never ever go to the state house. You know, to me, it's as if they've required a lobotomy before you can be a member of the state legislature.
I actually testified there, Harvey, when they were eliminating the Green Party. And I was making a point that you're very familiar with. I'm saying they kicked all the parties off, four parties, particularly Libertarians and Greens. They kicked us off because we didn't have enough votes in 2012. So I'm trying to explain the Constitution to this Republican Senator Syke that you can't pass ex post facto laws, that you can't hold us accountable in 2014 for an election in 2012 when there was a different standard. And quite really, he didn't get it. It's like nonsense.
I would have to say that some of my most depressing moments in all of life have been in the Ohio legislature. I just can't go there anymore. You know, it's just pathetic. And so now the legislature is to the right even of Kasich, for God's sakes. Kasich, you know,
I would argue significantly to the right.
Yeah, and Kasich did make national headlines once by being thrown out of a Grateful Dead concert. I mean, he tried to go backstage, assuming that since he was a congressman, he would be welcomed by the Grateful Dead, and they had a different opinion on that, as I recall.
Oh, absolutely. And I recall, Harvey, that he told them they would never play Washington, D.C.
Right. So Kasich, he does have this kind of semi-hip air about him, but, you know, he also talks about God all the time. I mean, they're going to position him. I guess it's not out of the question he could get the Republican nomination for president.
If things fell into place and self-destruction of, you know, Rubio, and as Chris Christie seems to have done, is that there's a possibility, you know, that with his backers, you know, he worked for Lehman Brothers there, is that he's now, hard to believe, a moderate figure in the Republican Party, and he's from the Midwest. So conceivably, he could get the nomination.
It's a staggering thought. But I would assume that the only guy who's really ahead of him would be Jeb Bush. I mean, we could envision in our worst nightmare
a Bush Kasich ticket in 2016.
Don't you agree? Like Burger King. Yeah, no, I agree. You've got Florida and Ohio. You've got the two key states the Republicans would need in a close election to win.
Right, Florida and Ohio. And, Kasich is popular enough in the state, I think, that if he was on the ticket, it would definitely help him here.
Yeah, because Ohio is usually split down the middle, 51-49, 52-48. You know, you could probably count down a 3-5% bump, just enough to deliver the state to the Republican Party. But also what would help is that Secretary of State, John Houston, who is notoriously biased. I mean, he has all these directives. One of the directives he came up with is that we had to write in as the Green Party. And so did two Libertarian candidates for Secretary of State, for example, and for State Auditor, is when you pulled a Democratic or Libertarian ballot, the poll workers were forbidden from giving you the names of the write-in candidates unless you asked for it. But they weren't allowed to tell you they had the names. It wasn't ever made public that you were entitled to know the names and be able to spell them. So essentially, he also destroyed the souls to the polls. He outlawed Sunday early voting, which is where a majority of blacks have voted. Because on early voting, all you need is the last four digits of your Social Security number and your date of birth. So many blacks who vote on Election Day lose their right to vote. They're forced to vote provisionally. It's just balance. Their ballots are challenged. So they've been voting in the early voting, but particularly in the right before the election on the Tuesday, the Sunday before, black churches all over the state of Ohio take vans and buses to polls, and they all vote. And because of that, their votes are being counted. So John Houston, the Republican Secretary of State, simply outlawed that as early voting.
Well, who said black people could vote anyway? I mean, that's kind of the attitude of the Republican Party in Ohio, and there's no doubt about that. They'll do everything in their power to prevent the blacks from voting in the upcoming elections, and you know, it's really disturbing. Actually, it's very infuriating and embarrassing. But the reality is that, as you know, probably better than anybody, Bob, you and I have written all this stuff and done all these investigations. Jim Crow is alive and well in Ohio, probably as much as any other state in the country.
Oh, absolutely. And this whole new blatant Jim Crow lift. They're targeting black voters, but they're also targeting the elderly. They're targeting, Hispanics, and they're targeting young voters and poor voters as well, forcing them to show up with all sorts of new forms of ID, et cetera.
Right.
That's going on. But what's going on, equally important, is Secretary of State Nina Turner's running, and she's involved with a variety of civil rights activists who want the state of Ohio to add to its constitution an amendment that would make your right to vote a constitutional protected right. So we would become like a few states, Virginia being one, where your provisional vote is 8 times more likely to be counted because it's a constitutional right to vote in Virginia. So there's a movement afoot. Signatures are being gathered as we speak to get a new amendment to the Ohio Constitution guaranteeing people a constitutional right to vote. Long overdue, should be done nationally as well.
Well, would this be on the 2014 ballot or 2016?
Yeah, that's the... I don't know if they can get enough signatures, but they're shooting for this year.
How many signatures are required?
Roughly around 485,000 ballot signatures.
Wow.
That's a lot. But, yeah, do we think it would pass?
Polls indicate at this time it would pass, but there would be a tremendous counter-campaign from the Republican Party, essentially accusing, you know, Hispanics, college students, blacks of voter fraud. Remember back in 2004 when they claimed, when the Republicans claimed the NAACP and ACORN were paying people in crack in order to register to vote or to vote. All turned out to be a lie, but it was a very effective and public racial stereotyping type of lie, which had tremendous impact, you know, to a lot of the rural whites in Ohio who thought the NAACP was passing out crack in exchange for voter registrations.
Bob, we're down to our last 4 minutes. As usual, the show has flown by. We're talking with Bob Fitrakis, a professor of political science at Columbia State Community College, an attorney and the publisher and editor of Columbus Free Press and www.freepress.org, where my column also appears. Let's talk about this constitutional amendment because it's critical. Is it drafted specifically? This is a constitutional amendment that's going to go on the Ohio ballot, hopefully, no later than 2015, that guarantees everybody the right to vote. Is that correct?
It makes the right to vote a constitutionally protected right, just like free speech. Right now, your right to vote is really left up to local presiding judges at precinct. And I've seen these people operate. These young black males walked into the driving park on the south side of Columbus, and there was a precinct judge there, a Republican, who simply told them they all had to vote provisionally. Didn't look in the book, refused to look in the book. I made a scene as an election observer and was threatened with arrest. I told him what he was doing was illegally. Technically, observers aren't supposed to tell precinct judges. But the precinct judge had this tremendous power to send people to cast a second-class ballot that is, you know, highly suspect, and at least 17% of those ballots aren't going to be counted. So you just reduce the black male vote in driving park by 17%, you know, which will change any close election by one judge saying something. It'll no longer be up to these precinct judges and these board of elections. It'll be a constitutional right. They'll have to prove that you don't deserve the vote and take away your constitutional right. Now they don't have to do it.
Bob Fitrakis, this is really a critical moment because, you know, the idea of a constitutional amendment to protect the right to vote is really long overdue, and we want to thank you for putting that up. Hopefully we'll have a trend that starts here in Ohio, where so many other trends start, for a national constitutional amendment that would guarantee the right to vote. Long overdue. We have suffered through too many stolen elections. Bob, this hour has flown by. We've covered hemp. We've covered tracking the candidacy of John Kasich. Bob is the publisher and editor of www.freepress.org, professor of political science at Columbia State Community College. Bob, thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated, and we'll have the URL to you and get this show out. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Another hour has just flown by. Protect your right to vote, people, and protect your right to grow hemp. They go hand in hand. We'll see you next week. Thank you for the crew in New York, Jason and company, and we'll talk to you next week on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Take it away, Pete.
Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia.